What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman. All right, so today I am very excited about this case. Weird to say, but I am, mostly because it's solved. But we are going to be covering the Lululemon murder, aka the murder of Jana Murray. This one is solved, like I just said, and I think this is my officially solved case. Like, last week's case of the TikTok murder is like almost solved, but Michael Lee Dudley is still not like sentenced to jail, or, you know, like, he's still in the trial phase. So I'm excited that like this week's will be wrapped up in like a nice bow, if you will. Yeah.
Me too, because I feel like I've been doing unsolved cases as well.
Yeah. Which is like, those are good to do. They're fun because you get to talk about the theories, and then also like they're good to get the word out there. But right. Still, it like, it's sometimes you just need a good solved case to make you feel a little bit better.
Absolutely.
Before we get into it, I want to just shout out where I got a lot of the info for this episode. It is from another YouTuber. Her name is Eleanor Neal, and she covered this back in April of 2020, and she did an amazing job. I feel like when I was first like looking, a lot of the sources I was finding just had more info on the conviction and like what happened once the murderer was caught, and not as much of like the backstory. And so when I found her video, she just did a really good job of like consolidating everything. So okay. I just wanted to shout her out, and I'll have her video like linked down in the show notes, but I just wanted to shout her out because she's awesome, and she has a bunch of other videos that I'm really excited to watch because she did a really good job, and also she has an awesome accent. So like, that just makes it all better.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start off this case by talking about the victim, because she deserves all the spotlights that she can get. And that's just how Absolutely. I wanted to start off today. So Jana Murray, I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. That's how I found it on all the sources. So please don't come for me, but pretty sure. Jana Murray was born in Kansas on November 22nd, 1980, making her 30 years old when she was murdered. When she was young, her family moved to Texas, where she grew up. Jana was very smart and talented, and she was a hard worker in school. She was super adventurous, and she loved to be outdoors and around people, and she loved doing high adrenaline sports like skydiving and bungee jumping, which like, that just Whoa. Terrifies me.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah. So she truly lived life to the fullest. And just a little side note, my sister, I'm pretty sure, is going to go skydiving for her birthday in September. Because it's her golden year, and then she asked Robert to go with her, my fiance, and I'm pretty sure he's gonna go. So oh I'm just gosh. Like, I don't want to know what you're doing. Just like, call me after.
Yeah,
like,
please call me after.
I don't want to be involved.
I used to really want to skydive, but I like grew out of that.
Yeah. So, no, I know. No That's thanks. So scary.
No thanks.
Yeah. So Jana truly lived her life to the fullest. She loved to travel, and she had actually been to 6 of the 7 continents at just 30 years old, which Wow. is like super impressive. Yeah. She loved to dance, and she was actually like at the time taking classes in salsa and tap. And her instructors had like wanted her to make dancing a career because of her talent in it. So she really just like loved doing all different types of things and was very talented.
Wow.
After studying abroad in Spain in college, Jana moved to Washington, D.C. in the Washington, D.C. area, not directly in D.C., where she met her boyfriend, Frazier. And they'd been together for a long time. And not long before Jana was murdered, Frazier had been looking at engagement rings ready to propose.
Oh my gosh.
And that literally, I started crying when I read that, because I was like, that's just, yeah. And it was like a couple months before, like it wasn't wow. like he was going to do it, which is, yeah,
that's so sad.
I hate that. Anyway, She was always laughing and making others smile, and her family described her smile as a megawatt smile, which I just love that, like, way to describe a smile.
That's when you know it's like a big, beautiful smile.
Exactly. Jana worked at Lululemon while she was earning 2 degrees in college in both business and communications. At the time of her murder, she had been working there for a while, and she had loved working for Lululemon and had worked her way up to a general manager at the store, which meant she had like a set of keys at the store. And that's why she was on the closing shift the night that she was murdered. She was really popular among her coworkers, and they all described her happiness as infectious. So we are in March of 2011, March 11th, 2011, to be specific. We're at a Lululemon store in a mall in Bethesda, Maryland. And I'm sure a lot of people know this, but some may not. So I'm just going to like explain what Lululemon is. Lululemon Athletica is a line of athleisure and exercise gear, mainly known for their expensive leggings slash yoga pants. Their leggings are usually in the $100 range, and they have all different types. They also sell like shorts and tops and jackets and stuff like that. And they also sell other workout gear or other athleisure gear and men's clothes. And I am guilty of shopping there. I love their leggings, and like, I am a big believer that they're so worth it. I know they're expensive, but I literally still have pairs that I had like 8 years ago that are still in good shape. So like, in my opinion, they're worth it. Right. And I feel like now there's like way more brands that have nice leggings. Like you can get nice leggings from other stores, but like back when I got my first pair of Lulus and like 2011, 2012, they were like one of the only brands out there, at least that I knew of, that had good quality leggings, and like other brands would completely loosen up. So they became known for being like really good quality leggings kind of when the leggings phase was just hitting. Like people were just starting to wear leggings as pants, and they were like the best brand that you could find. So that's why I got my Lulus, and I just had to defend myself because I do love them. And a lot of people kind of like get shit for wearing Lulus and having a lot of Lulus, but they really are good quality. So
yeah,
just saying. So Lululemon stores are in a lot of malls, and there was one in this Bethesda, Maryland shopping complex. And it was like an outdoor shopping mall with a ton of stores, more like a complex, not your typical indoor mall. And Lululemon was right next to the Apple store, which I feel like kind of tends to happen because I don't know if you've ever noticed, but it seems like in malls, they put the like fancier stores closer together, which makes sense. And so it was right next door to Apple. And this specific area of Maryland was near Washington, D.C. And it was a nice like middle to upper class or middle to middle upper class area. So like not upper class, but not like, you know, they people had money to spend.
And it's expensive in Maryland too. Like when I lived in Virginia, like it's pretty penny to buy a house there.
Right. That doesn't surprise me, especially that close to DC, like suburbs of DC. That's what you're going to get. So on March 12th, 2011, Rachel, the store manager at this Lululemon, got to the store to open up for the day. And she noticed that the door was unlocked. And obviously this was immediately a red flag. I mean, anytime you're expecting the door to be locked and it isn't, it's going to be scary. But at this point, she kind of just thought someone had left it unlocked and didn't expect at all what she was about to see. No. You know, the door, it was closed. It wasn't like it was shattered or something like that. Yeah. So she didn't expect to see anything bad. She just thought someone had left it unlocked. When she went inside, she noticed that some things were out of place. From photos that I've seen, it doesn't really look like it's completely ransacked like you would expect if it had been robbed, but it was clear that something had happened, at least from, you know, the very front of the store. And I'll post some of the photos on our Instagram, so you can kind of see what it looked like. But I am also just going to caution, if you Google photos for this case, just be careful if you don't want to see,
some explicit,
some of the photos of the victim is just, and even of the store, are very explicit and there's a lot of blood and stuff like that. And I'm not going to post any of those on our Instagram. So if you don't want to see any of that, then don't Google it. Google just it. Go look at, just go look on our Instagram, because it's like you, I didn't want to see that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I knew that as I went into Googling, but this is me warning you because I didn't listen to the warning.
Same. I did the same thing.
So as soon as she noticed that, like, things were more out of place, and she could tell something was up, she ran outside, because at this point she had no clue what had happened. She didn't know if there was a robber still inside or, like, what was going on. So she ran outside and called the police. And as I mentioned earlier, the Lululemon store was right next door to an Apple store. And that morning happened to be the day that the iPad 2 was launching, which, like, when I heard that, I was like, that's crazy, because 2011 feels like yesterday, but that was 10 years ago. Like, wild.
A whole decade. I know. That's crazy.
Yeah. So the iPad 2 was launching. So because of that, there was actually a crowd of people outside the Apple store, like, waiting for it to open. And one of the men in line actually noticed Rachel and how she seemed to be in distress. And he went over to see if she was okay. And Rachel asked the man if he had seen anyone go in or out of the store, because he had been there for, like, 2 hours waiting for the Apple store to open. You know, there's always lines and stuff when stuff like that happens. So he hadn't seen anything, but he did offer to go back into the store with her to check it out. And as they were walking through the store, they noticed that things looked to be more ransacked the further back they got. So from the front of the store, it just looked like there were a couple things. But as you walk towards the back, there was more and more out of place. When they got to the back where the cash registers were, they saw that all the registers, along with the safes that the store had all been emptied. There were, like, receipts all over the floor. And so it was clear that somebody had, like, really ransacked this part of the store and, you know, stolen the money out of the registers.
That's so crazy that someone would do that in a mall store, you know?
I know. That's why, like, I think this was a little different from your typical mall, because it was kind of like an outdoor area. And I feel like I'm really used to that, because in California, most of our malls are outdoors. Like, there's not a ton that are actually indoor. Yeah. So I'm more used to that. But when I was in the Midwest, like, like, the outside of a mall is just, like, it looks like a box, and then you go inside and it's the mall. But this one was a little bit more of the, like, outdoor shopping complex versus being, like, an actual typical mall.
Okay. That makes a lot.
So I guess it would make it a little more, like, likely, because it's not like you have to walk into a mall and then into a store. You're just kind of, like, going from outside. So I'm guessing once Rachel and the man from the Apple store line saw this, they were just thinking it was, like, a robbery and robbers had stolen all the cash. So they actually kept going through the store into the two back rooms. And when they went into the first one, it was a disaster. And again, I'll post some, like, photos and stills from the video footage that was taken, because it's honestly kind of scary how the room looked. There were things thrown all over. There was broken glass everywhere. And then they noticed blood. And there was a lot of blood. There was a trail of blood that looked like someone had been dragged. And then there were bloody footprints in the back room and even back out onto the store floor, they noticed at this point.
Wow.
And up until now, they had only seen the blood and they didn't see bodies or anything. So Rachel kind of decided to stay in the front part of the store and was talking to police on the phone while the man went back into the second room to check it out and, like, see what was going on. So he followed the bloody footprints and he came across a body. The body was laying face down in a pool of blood with a rope around the neck. And the man assumed it was a woman because of the long hair. Of course, he was very disturbed and panicked at this point. So he started to go back into the main part of the store where Rachel was when he heard a noise coming from further back in the store.
Nope.
Like, I'd be terrified. I would run the other way.
Yeah, I'd be noping right out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. But he bravely decided to go see what this sound was. And when he got to the employee bathroom, he found another woman also covered in blood, but not as much as the first. This woman had her hands and feet zip tied and she had cuts and scrapes all over her body. But the man did notice that it wasn't, like, actual stab wounds or anything. She was just cut all over. kind of like what you would think you'd get from like falling down a bunch of rocks or something like that. But they were all over her body, and there was blood all over her. So he wasn't 100% sure, like maybe she had gotten cut or a big injury somewhere.
Yeah.
And then he noticed that she was breathing, and he obviously freaked out because even though he couldn't see a big cut or wound, there was still a lot of blood around her. And so he realized that this woman needed to get to the hospital, and he ran back out to Rachel to tell her to get an ambulance. And at this point, Rachel realized who these two women were. They were two of her employees that had worked the closing shift the night before. 28-year-old Brittany Norwood was the one that was still breathing, and the other woman was 30-year-old Jana Murray. So when police got there, they saw all of the blood and put together that this was a brutal attack. They discovered that Brittany had been zip-tied, like I said, and although she was still clothed, her shirt was pulled up over her stomach and her leggings had a hole cut in the crotch. And then in the employee bathroom where Brittany was, they found a bloody rock and assumed that's what was used to attack her, at least on the forehead where she had a giant gash. And they also found other signs of a struggle in the room, including a hanger with blood on it, empty Windex bottles, and just like random shit all over the room. Like it was just a disaster. The paramedics took Brittany to the hospital while the other paramedics pronounced Jana Murray dead on the scene. On top of Jana, the police actually found the store's toolbox sitting open and almost completely empty. The room that Jana was in, as I mentioned earlier, was completely destroyed and gruesome. So just an additional trigger warning, because I'm going to describe some of the blood. So if you want to skip ahead like 30 seconds, do that now so that you can skip over that part. The entire room had like a thin layer of blood covering the floor. Like it literally looked like the floor was just red because of the blood all over it.
My gosh.
And there were thicker pools of blood around her body. There was also blood spatter on the walls, some of it up to 6 feet high, which is just crazy to me.
Wow. That's like a big artery.
Yeah, exactly. Most of the tools in the toolbox were scattered around the room with blood on them, and there were also bloody footprints all around the room and the other back rooms, as I mentioned. And the footprints were actually identified by crime scene investigators as coming from two different shoes. One was suspected to be a smaller woman's shoe around a size like 5 or 6 US size, and the other was suspected to be a man's shoe around size 14, which is actually like really
huge.
Big.
Yeah. Really big.
So the larger of the footprints led up to and stopped at a sink, leading the police to think that the killer like took the shoes off and rinsed them in the sink and then took the shoes with them or changed shoes or did something. And police actually believed at this point that possibly the person went towards a fire exit door that was at the back of the store, because there was blood leading up to that and on the door handle. However, there was no blood at all outside the door. So that confused them, because they were like, if he went up to the door, why wouldn't he leave out that door?
Yeah.
So then they thought maybe the blood came from one of the women trying to escape. And this theory was helped by the fact that there was a key that was in the door, which would have been the only way to open it. And clearly only the employees have the key. So they thought maybe one of the women were like either forced to go or just were trying to escape. And that's why there was blood leading up to it. And then they were caught before they got out. So right away, there are a lot of theories about what happened here. And we'll get more into those as we talk about how the investigation went in a little bit. But first, we're going to cover the autopsy of Jana. And again, just a little trigger warning additionally, because this is like a really brutal crime. And I think to tell the story, you have to explain, but just that little warning. So Jana sustained at least 331 separate wounds.
Oh my
gosh. And that's the low end of the estimate.
That's what they could tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Upward of 105 of those were defensive wounds, indicating that she was alive during a lot of the attack. There were stab wounds, strangulation marks, and like blunt force wounds. Around 200 of the 331 wounds were to her face and neck.
Oh my
200
God.
To just her face and neck.
That's not even enough area, like surface area. That's insane. No.
And the rest were mainly on her arms, chest, and torso. So a lot of those indicated kind of defensive wounds, like trying to cover her face or whatever. Yeah. Hold on, I'm going to close the door. Robert just got home.
Okay.
No. Hi. Oh, wow. He's flipping me off.
What a turd.
I know. Okay. Her skull itself literally caved in at one point, or at one part of it, and it sustained 13 different fractures, which led to bruising of her brain. So, like, this takes a lot of force. This isn't just hitting someone hard. This is, like, full-on going at them,
that's
beating
a rage,
them, intending,
like a rage
yeah,
killer, yeah,
yeah. You guys can't see me, but I'm like stabbing with my hand, like trying to indicate, because it is like bruising the brain. That takes a lot of force.
Yeah, it does. That's what your skull is there for, to protect your brain. So that shouldn't
exactly
happen, you know,
yeah,
under
exactly
other circumstances. It's so crazy.
I left you a note.
What's up, fucker?
Hi, what's up, fucker?
Hey, kiddo.
He just wants
I left
to
you
see
a note so
child.
You wouldn't come in here. Yeah, he.
I came in here.
Go. I even put clothes out there for you. And I'm preheating the oven so you can make
Man,
pizza.
You're working for that ring.
Oh, shut up.
Come on, Mac.
Go on, Mackie. Go on. Go with Dad.
Come on, we're in trouble. Come on.
We're in trouble.
Okay. I know. So they determined at this point that the attacker used at least 5 different weapons, including the wrench and hammer from the toolbox, a rope that was found around her neck, and then a merchandise rack that was found near the body. So like one of those things that a bunch of clothes hangs on.
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. The worst part of this all is that the medical examiner believes that Jaina was alive for all of these wounds.
Yeah.
There was bruising and bleeding around the wounds that showed that she was still like breathing when she got these. She may not have been fully conscious during the entire attack, but she was alive, and they basically said she didn't die until the last hit.
Wow. That's horrific.
I know. She was ultimately killed by a stab wound to the back of her neck that literally pierced her brain. And the medical examiner said in court that the final stab wound she received would have killed her, like, within a minute.
Oh, my gosh. I'm surprised she didn't bleed out because of all the blood.
I know. Well, we'll find out later, like, it's not ever been proven how long the attack was, but it's likely that it was pretty quick. I mean, relatively, like,
yeah,
you know, with how much this is, it wasn't like she was beaten a bunch and then just laying there. It seemed like the attack just like kept going. So now Brittany, the other victim, was in the hospital. She had been rushed from the scene to the hospital as police feared that she was near death. They couldn't tell exactly what her wounds were from just looking at her, since there was so much blood.
I can hear the squeaky toy in the back.
All right.
It's okay.
I'm gonna say
it's
that
fine.
Again. No.
It's fine. Just made me laugh.
Dang it.
I hear like Manny screaming in the background and the squeaky toy in your background. But this is real life, so.
Children.
Exactly.
So because there was so much blood, they basically assumed that she was badly injured and they couldn't see where the wound was coming from. And I mean, that makes sense. Like sometimes if you get a really bad cut, there's like a ton of blood and you don't know like
where the cut
then
is.
You clean it off and you're like, oh, that's like tiny.
Yeah.
So they didn't know. So they rushed her to the hospital. However, when the doctors examined her, most of her wounds were actually very superficial and didn't really require a lot of medical attention. And she had only 2 like real wounds, you know, that needed like stitches or something like that. And she did tell police that she had been sexually assaulted and raped. So they did perform a rape kit. And we'll find out those results later on as we're talking about the suspects and stuff like that. Police decided to question her that night, wanting to figure out what happened and capture whoever did this. So I'm going to like explain her version of events and what she told police that night. So she said that the closing shift went as it normally did and that the two girls had closed up, locked the doors and left, heading home in different directions. But Brittany realized that she didn't have her wallet with her, meaning she couldn't use the metro to get home. So she actually called like a bunch of employees because she didn't have Jaina's number and she couldn't reach anybody. And then eventually she was able to get Jaina's number. And Jaina was already halfway home, but Brittany asked her to come back to unlock the doors and let Brittany like go in to get her wallet because basically she couldn't get home because she needed her metro card. So because of the amazing person Jaina was, and because she had also accidentally left her laptop at the store, she agreed to return to unlock the door for Brittany. And when she got back to the store, Jaina just quickly like parked her car right outside, not in a proper spot. And the two ran into the store to grab their things. They actually left the door unlocked since they were just going in quickly and they didn't even turn the lights on. Like they were pretty much running in to grab their things and come out. They were looking all over for the metro card and couldn't find it. And so Jaina actually offered for Brittany to just use hers. And Brittany said as they went to leave, that's when things went wrong. She said that they noticed that the front door to the store was wide open. And then right after, two men ambushed them. The taller of the two men hit Jaina on the head and then dragged her back to the back room, while the shorter man forced Brittany to the cash registers and made her open them. Brittany said that the man dragged her into a different back room where he zip tied her ankles and hands together and began to torture her. She said that she thought that he wasn't really trying to kill her, just trying to hurt and torture her, calling her racial slurs and threatening her. And she said that he then cut open her leggings and raped her, then apparently left the room, returned with a coat hanger, and assaulted her again. Wow. Brittany explained that she this whole time could hear Jaina being attacked. And as time went on, Brittany said Jaina's screams eventually faded out. So she like knew something was happening to Jaina. Right. She said the men then took her and threw her on top of Jaina's dead body, where they told her they would spare her life because, quote, she was more fun to fuck. That's what they told her. After that, the men grabbed her and threw her into the employee bathroom where they left her to be found.
So during the autopsy of Jaina, did they determine that she had been sexually assaulted?
I don't know if they ever tested it. It never came up. I don't know if she was so brutally like beaten that they didn't test it, or like since Jaina also Brittany didn't, I don't think ever said she like knew for sure Jaina was sexually assaulted. She just said she was, and she could hear Jaina being attacked. So yeah, I don't know if they ever tested it, but if they did, I didn't find it anywhere.
They probably did, and it probably came back either inconclusive or no evidence or something.
Right. So while telling this story to police, Brittany really struggled, and she kept blaming herself for the reason they had gone back, and she was clearly traumatized and kept asking how Jaina was doing, indicating that she didn't like know that Jaina was actually dead. So after this interview, police full-on went into investigation mode to find out who these two men were. They checked CCTV footage from the Apple store, which was right next door, like I mentioned before. And on that footage, they saw two men dressed in black walking down the road around the same time that the woman would have originally left the shop.
Right.
And they released that media or that footage to the media. And they released that there were two male suspects. And although they didn't have any sketches or anything, they advised everybody to look out for these men. Police started interviewing others that were in the area that night, and there was actually an employee working the closing shift at Apple that had some interesting things to say. She said that she heard, quote, screaming, squealing, and a lot of banging coming from the Lululemon that night. And she described this as, quote, high-pitched screams mixed with lower-pitched grunting and dragging noises as if something heavy was being moved. And this woman asked the Apple Store security guard, because they always have a security guard there. So she asked him to check it out. And he didn't like go over to the store or anything, but he listened and then eventually banged on the wall to kind of be like, hey, shut up, like be quiet. And it did stop, and they never went around to check or call police, which, like, looking back, you're like, why the hell wouldn't you do that? But also, I understand, like, I feel like we're all conditioned to not get into other people's business and not get involved. Plus, there's also the whole bystander effect, where everyone thinks, like, well, if it's bad enough, someone else will call. Right. So this is your reminder. No, call the police. You're always better safe than sorry. It's better they come check it out and nothing's going wrong than the other way around.
Someone is always being murdered. Just think that
way. Yes. And like the other thing is, even if it's not a murder, like you never know if like there's some like domestic violence going on or something like that. And I know it's like awkward and weird to call the police, but like just call, because you never know. And like this could have saved Jana's life.
So this is off topic and you can cut this out or you can leave it. I don't care. Like earlier this year, my mom and I were leaving to go to like Costco or something, and we were turning off of First Street, and on the main road, there was literally, it looked like a body wrapped in a blanket with duct tape. Like it was like a head.
Oh my God.
It was like duct tape around the neck and then duct tape around like the feet. It looked like a child's body. Like I'm not even kidding. I took a video of it. I have it. I can show it to you. I don't know why I haven't ever showed it to you before, but I called 911. I did.
Yeah.
And I was like, so this is going to be weird, but I think there might be possibly a body on the side of the road. And she was like, excuse me? And I was like, I don't know what it is, but it looks suspicious. So I had to call it in. And she's like, okay.
Yeah.
And they did. They came when we drove back by there, it was gone. So whatever it was, it was something. Gone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a body, but still.
You never know.
I said something. I had to.
Yeah. Good for you. That's what everybody should do.
Yes. I'm a true crime junkie, so I've been conditioned.
Yes. So yeah. The Apple employees never did anything, but from those accounts, they were able to figure out that these attacks happened around 10:15 or 10:30, and they actually were then able to like go and see that the alarm was turned off when Brittany and Jana returned to the store at 10:05 p.m. So now they have an idea of what time this happened. They can try to identify the suspects based on that time frame, and they really dove headfirst into this investigation. They quickly realized that they hadn't found Jana's car, leading them to believe that maybe the men had stolen it after the attack. And a different officer on the force actually recognized this car because it had Texas plates. And he recalled seeing it parked in a random lot a few blocks away from Lululemon on the night of the attack. Oh. And he saw it sitting in the lot with the lights on and someone in the passenger seat around 12:30 that night, or like technically the next morning, but that night. But then 2 hours after the attack, he drove by again, and it was, or 2 hours after that. So that was 2 hours after the attack that he originally saw it with the people inside. And then 2 hours after that, he passed the car again. I'm guessing he was like patrolling the area and he saw nobody in it and the lights were off. So the police returned to that lot a few days after the attack and the car was still there. So they were able to like impound that, start testing it, but that was going to take a little bit of time. So they continued investigating. They didn't have much. So the main detective on the case, Detective Dimitri Reuven, he decided to go do a stakeout at the mall to see if the men would return. And that night he saw two men in all black walk by the store.
Oh my gosh.
They had a height difference like Brittany described, and they were at the same place at the same time, just a few days after the murder. So Reuven actually approached them that night, and he showed them the photos captured from the Apple Store CCTV footage, and they admitted that it was them in the footage. But unfortunately, they had a completely innocent reason that they were walking by that night and this night a few days later. They worked at a restaurant a few doors down from the store and had gotten off work around that time, both nights. And they wore all black because they were waiters. And of course, police verified this, but it was confirmed that they had no involvement in the case.
Dun, dun, dun. They must have worked at Cheesecake Factory.
Probably. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a Cheesecake Factory there too. Like,
I'm sure there was.
Now I want cheesecake.
I know. Oh, yum.
So police are back to square one. They found another suspect, a homeless man named Keith, and he was known for being somewhat violent, and he hadn't been seen in his regular pub the night of the attack. So, you know, people were kind of like, oh, that's weird. Another person in the area said that he spotted Keith wearing all black and that he had a new friend that was also wearing all black. So they started like looking for him because they didn't know where he was since he was homeless. And they ended up finding him in a hospital where he had like some, you know, cuts and scrapes and was kind of bloody. Mm. They were actually able to arrest Keith for another crime that he was like charged for or whatever and hadn't been arrested. So they were able to arrest him and they started questioning him about his injuries. You know, they couldn't question him about directly about the murder because he wasn't arrested for that, but just about his injuries and what was going on. And he claimed that he had gotten into a fight with another homeless man. And as police were questioning him, they kind of began getting a sense that this man definitely was not capable of the attack on Jaina and Brittany. So eventually they ruled him out. Like, they just, with that and, you know, other evidence that, like, he wasn't actually, like, super bloody and stuff like that, they were able to rule him out. So at this point, police were at a dead end. They had no leads. So they kind of, you know, went back to square one and started looking over all of the evidence again. And this is when they started to notice some inconsistencies in the evidence or just some things that the first time around they kind of like looked over or, you know, wrote off as like, oh, that's not a big deal. But now they were like, okay, we have a different...
Yeah,
like we were looking at it from a different perspective. This is kind of weird. So the first thing I realized was that the attackers hadn't brought any weapons with them. So everything that was used in the attacks, even the zip ties, belonged to the store. And that's going to be important later. So remember that the zip ties belong to the store. On top of that, like the attackers had to actually find the tools in the store. It's not like they were sitting out like, yes, they did use that one like merchandise rack, but a lot of it was from the toolbox. And that's not something that's just like sitting in plain sight. So if these people were going in to like attack somebody, it's weird that they didn't bring stuff. And additionally, this is even like more interesting. It didn't seem like they brought anything to actually break into the store. So like, even if they weren't planning to attack, you can't just like walk into a store, you know, like you have to somehow be able to break in.
Right.
It could have been that they did bring something and then it was like just they got lucky.
Perfect that, timing that they came back. Yeah.
So you know that could have been a thought, but just like it was suspicious to police that it, you know, didn't look like they brought anything to break in. The other thing was there were a lot of different weapons used in the attack, so it had to take time for them to, like, get each of these weapons. And it was actually estimated that the quickest the attack on Jaina could have been would have been 5 minutes. And that means that there was one hit every second, which seems very unlikely considering how many and how brutal her wounds were. Like, if it was one every second, you're, like, nonstop.
Right.
And that just doesn't seem possible with how many weapons were used and the force and all of that. So even if it was one hit every 3 seconds, that would be 17 minutes long. So like, would two random people just robbing a store actually go and attack like this for that long?
No.
Don't think so. Like, especially if you just robbed a store and wanted to get out of there. Like,
you want to get in and out. Exactly.
Yeah. So at this point, police are kind of thinking, well, maybe it wasn't random. Maybe it was actually targeted at one or both of the girls. So the next thing that the investigators kind of started looking more into were the shoe prints that were left. So if you remember, there were 2 sets of bloody shoe prints left all around the store. One was believed to be from a woman or one of the 2 women there, and then the other from one of the attackers. But they found it curious that there were only 2 shoe prints left out of the 4 people in the store. And even if, like, okay, Brittany or Jaina was attacked and didn't leave any shoe prints, there's still only two for three people. When I first heard this, I was like, that's interesting. But then I was like, well, if Jaina was like already down, and then if Brittany was like tied up, maybe she wouldn't make shoe prints. But they did, one of the shoe print sets of shoe prints was significantly smaller and really looked like a woman's set. So like, that doesn't really work.
Yeah. And chances are the tinier one was not like another, like the other guy that was supposedly right there.
Exactly.
Size 5. That's teeny tiny.
Yeah. That's like smaller than an average woman, I would say.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And as they were looking more into these shoe prints, they actually were asking Rachel, the store manager, about the larger shoes, because they did find the pair of 14, size 14. I think they were a pair of Reebok, like athletic shoes. And they found them in the store. And so they were asking Rachel about it. And she then told them that those shoes belonged to the store, meaning that they were there before the attack and they weren't something that was left behind by the attacker. And this baffled police, because they completely thought that these belonged to one of the men, and investigators just couldn't figure out why the man would remove his own shoes. And then even if he did, how did he know those shoes were there? Again, it's not like they were sitting out in plain sight. Like, it's just very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
And then a few other things that they noticed at this point in their investigation. They realized that the Apple Store employees never actually mentioned hearing any man's voice, even though Brittany had said that her attacker was yelling at her. So they were like, if what Brittany says is true and like he was yelling at her, why didn't they hear a man's voice? Right. Yeah. Investigators also started to think about the discrepancy in injuries between Jaina and Brittany. Jaina was completely brutalized to a point where she couldn't even be recognized like by looking at her. Whereas Brittany had mostly superficial injuries, and police had kind of just like looked over this at first, seeing it as not very important. But now that they were starting to think more about it, they were like, okay, this is not right.
Which is so crazy to me, because like, as soon as you said that, and this, you know, I do know this story. I mean, I've heard it before. I don't really remember all the details, but as soon as you said that detail, I was like, red flag.
Yeah, exactly. But I guess, like, with the story Brittany was telling them, they were just like, okay, yeah, like, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with all of this that they were discovering, they actually started wondering if Brittany was in on the attack. So before I go any further, I want to give a little bit of background on Brittany, just so you can kind of know who she is. Brittany Norwood was born on May 19th, 1982, making her 28 years old at the time of the incident. She was originally from Seattle, Washington, and she had 8 siblings and a very happy and normal childhood. She was smart, and she did well in school, and she loved to play sports. When she went to college, she joined her college soccer team, which she had worked so hard because she loved to play, and she was really excited. But some weird stuff started happening when she was on the team. Her teammates started noticing their belongings going missing from the locker room, and a lot of them suspected Brittany. When they confronted her, she admitted it and apologized. And although they did more or less forgive her, they also couldn't trust her. So they started, like, you know, just kind of hanging out with her less and stuff like that. So this really took a toll on Brittany, because she had just worked so hard to become a part of this team. And eventually she was able to make new friends. But I think this kind of really started affecting her. As she got into her, like, quote unquote, real life out of college, she continued to have this kind of criminal thief side to her. She started working at Lululemon, and she actually got fired from one Lululemon store for stealing from it. And then after that, she moved to the Bethesda Lululemon, where she met Jaina.
Interesting. So she was stealing from her teammates and then felt bad about herself because no one liked her. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, you know.
Okay, yeah. Totally normal.
Yeah.
Sociopath. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, just a little bit. Police began looking into Brittany's past to see if there were any people that were in her life that might have done this. And as they started investigating her more, they started kind of learning more about her past that they didn't know before. there were more petty thefts than they had first realized, along with many friends and others reporting her scamming them out of money or services. They also found that she hadn't actually finished college, even though she told her family that she did. Just a lot of like manipulating and lying going on.
So a narcissist. That's what I meant to say a second ago when I said sociopath, but I meant narcissist.
No worries. She had had a restraining order filed against her at one point by the girlfriend of an ex-boyfriend of hers, or it was the ex-boyfriend, I'm not 100% sure, but somebody in that relationship, because she had continually been like harassing them both, wouldn't leave them alone. So, you know, restraining order, and she violated that restraining order multiple times.
Girl, chill.
Yeah. Like,
what are you doing?
Yeah. And here's where things get a little even more interesting. Rachel, the Lululemon store manager, told police that Brittany had actually abused an employee store discount and that Jana and Brittany didn't really get along. Mm. Brittany had been suspected of stealing from Lululemon and from her coworkers, just as she did with her soccer team and the first store she worked at. A group of managers from the store, which included Jana, had basically like gotten together and decided that Brittany would have one more chance, but if she was caught stealing again, they would have to fire her. The day before her murder, Jana had told Rachel that she suspected Brittany of stealing again. So Lululemon has a company policy where employees must check each other's bags before leaving a shift at work to prevent stealing. And of course, like, I'm sure that employees don't love this because you don't want like your integrity questioned. But it's just part of working at Lululemon's, and the employees just have to comply with it. And it seems like, for the most part, they, like, get it, and they're like, okay, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if everyone's just part of my job. Doing it, like, whatever. It's not just you.
Exactly.
Brittany.
Yeah. So the day before the attacks, Jana went to do a routine bag check for Brittany after believing she saw Brittany slip a pair of leggings into her bag. And Brittany told her that another employee had already done it, but Jana went and checked with that other employee, and that girl said, no, I didn't. So Jana was on to Brittany and suspected that Brittany had stolen again. So back to the investigation. At this point, police finally got the forensic results back from Jana's car. And they found both girls' blood, which they had expected, because if, you know, the attackers went into it, they probably had both girls' blood on them. But they found a hat with blood right at the top front of the hat, exactly where it would have hit Brittany's head from the cut that she had on her forehead. So I don't think that they like tested that and knew that it was Brittany's blood, but that's a really weird spot to have a random little patch of blood right where the cut was on her forehead.
Right.
So with all of this, they brought Brittany back in and started questioning her about some of the things that seemed suspicious. So at this point, she claimed that she had no clue what car Jana had, you know, drove, and indicated that there was no reason that she would have been inside it. So how did that hat get inside? Mm-hmm. And then she also claimed that the attackers pulled the zip ties out of the backpack, which, if you remember, I told you to keep in the back of your mind that the zip ties, they matched two zip ties in the store.
Right.
So we know that that's not true. And police actually confronted her about that. And she claimed she couldn't properly remember, which, like, I get that. If you were going through that, like, you might not remember. And after that question, Brittany asked to leave the police station, and they had nothing to hold her. So she left, but they finally were like, okay, this girl is a suspect.
Yeah.
After this, they brought in an expert to look at Brittany's injuries. And that expert determined that the injury on her hand would have been consistent with a blade slipping. And there was no reason in any part of Brittany's story where she would have held a blade.
Right.
And then the expert also speculated that the injury on her forehead could have come from her hitting herself as she lifted up a weapon while attacking someone. So think you're like kneeling over somebody, like hitting them downwards, and then you come up and hit your forehead. So right. That's what they suspected happened. Detective Reuven brought all of this evidence to the rest of the investigative team, and his theory was now that nobody had entered or left the store that day, and that Brittany had murdered Jana. with that, they had another forensic expert come back to look at the crime scene with this new point of view, because before they were looking at it in the sense that there were two attackers that came in. Now they're looking at it that Brittany did it. This forensic expert found teeth marks on the zip ties, and the zip ties that were used to tie Brittany's wrist together, and that is consistent with the only way that a person would be able to zip tie their own wrist together, because you know, you'd have your wrist together, you'd need to grab it with your teeth.
Right.
The blood that was found around Brittany, they also noticed was kind of more smeared and not really pooled as it had been around Jaina. And then they, after that, remembered that there were blood-soaked paper towels that they had found around Brittany. So they put together that she must have soaked up Jaina's blood and smeared it on and around herself to make it look like she was attacked.
Wow. I'll give her credit. She definitely gave it her all.
Yeah.
Creative, for sure.
Oh, yeah. So as police are putting this all together, Brittany actually came back to them and said that she had some new information she remembered. She told them that the men had forced her to move Jaina's car and walk back to the store, and that she was threatened, that they threatened her that if she said anything, she'd be dead. So she is claiming that she left the store alone.
In a car.
Drove the car away and then walked back so she wouldn't be killed. I'm sorry, but excuse me. Who would do that and not just drive straight to the police or just leave? You are alone. They're not accompanying you, to ensure you don't leave. To be fair, you never know how you're going to react in those situations. But I'm sorry. What the fuck were you doing? There's no way.
And you just conveniently left that part out. My memory just came back to me.
Right. Yeah. No. So clearly the officers did not believe her, and they decided to confront her straight up right then and there, and she just kept denying it. The officer doing the questioning ended up basically sitting right in front of her and explaining all of the evidence that showed that she's lying, and she did not say a word the entire time, and when he finished, she just said, "Can I go home now?" Which technically she could have left because she hadn't been arrested. Officers weren't holding her there, but instead of being like, "Yeah, let's go," they said, "Let's just take a break," and they left the room. And this is a tactic that they'll do a lot, kind of leave the room and then come back and try to make the person forget that they had said they wanted to leave. When they returned, they actually brought her siblings in with them. And this, I was like, so how long was she waiting in there? But maybe it wasn't super long. I don't know. But they brought Brittany's siblings into the room. And
all seven of them?
No, okay. Just two of them.
Okay.
Yeah, just a brother and sister. Okay. And so they were basically explaining all the evidence again to Brittany and her siblings. And eventually officers left Brittany and her brother, Chris, alone in the room. Of course, they were not completely alone. They're in an interrogation room. So there's audio and video of the entire encounter. But Brittany was like, "Hey, Chris, check if there's cameras." And he looked around and didn't see anything, but I think he was smarter than that. But so Brittany kind of calmed down, and Chris said to Brittany, quote, "You need to tell me right now, did you do it?" Brittany denied it at first, but Chris kept pushing until she just stopped denying it. And she said that she didn't want to talk about it in the police station. And although that's not an actual confession, it was enough for police. So on March 18th, 2011, 1 week after the attack, Brittany Norwood was arrested on suspicion of the murder of Jaina Murray. Police still didn't have a motive, but they suspected that Brittany had somehow found out that Jaina and the other managers were on to Brittany's stealing and that she was going to get fired. They thought that possibly Brittany hadn't meant to murder Jaina and had only wanted to intimidate her or scare her into not saying anything. She did have a job interview at a gym a few days after this and would be leaving Lululemon. So they were thinking she was just trying to intimidate Jaina into just not saying anything, but they really didn't know. And to this day, Brittany has never talked about her motive or why she did this.
Probably because she got caught with those leggings. So she basically killed somebody over some $100
over leggings.
Yeah. And it was clearly, like I said before, a rage killing, like fit of rage, yeah. like not thinking, just stabbing, just beating, going. Whatever she could find, you know, and then she like yeah. was like, fuck, what am I going to do? And then she formulated this grand plan of
yeah,
tie myself up, smear myself with blood.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really like, there's no, we don't know exactly what happened and like at what point if one of them confronted the other or what happened, but we know it was because of the leggings and that yeah. she knew that she was going to be caught stealing. Brittany's defense lawyer tried to argue insanity, saying that she had an undiagnosed mental disorder and that had been triggered that night. I don't know if he tried to argue the like not guilty by reason of insanity or just tried to prove she was insane to get a lesser sentence. Yeah. I think it's the latter. But he was basically trying to say that like no one with a sound mind could have done what Brittany did that night to Jaina. So she must have had a big mental break. And yes, she probably is very mentally ill, but I don't think she had an undiagnosed mental disorder that just like blew up that night. I do yeah. not think that's what happened.
No, I don't think so either. She just flew into a fit of rage.
Yeah. The prosecution brought forward all the evidence showing exactly how she did this. They said she lured Jaina back to the store where a confrontation happened that possibly led to an argument and ultimately led to Jaina's murder. They explained how she then staged the crime scene, destroying the store, taking the cash out of the registers, tracking blood all around, using the shoe to literally track footprints around. She took this size 14 shoe that they had in the store, walked through the blood, and then walked all around the store trying to make it look like there was a man that had walked around. Yeah. And then she injured herself to make it look like she was attacked too. She smeared blood all over herself. She did everything she could to make this look yeah. like she was attacked. And she really was very smart with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The jury deliberated for less than an hour, which is really fast for a murder trial.
Yeah.
And the judge sentenced Brittany Norwood to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
Wow.
Brittany apologized to Jaina's family, but everyone says how like fake that sounded. And a lot of people speculate that she only did that to try to like appeal to the public and the judge to possibly be able to get parole. Yeah. But it didn't work. She is clearly a monster. Not only did she commit this horrific crime, but she then staged an entire scene, claimed she was attacked, and then refused to admit the truth. And still, I don't think she's ever admitted it and like said, you know, she apologized, but she's never like explained what happened or said why it happened or any of that.
Wow. That's kind of crazy. I mean, maybe she did kind of, you know, because of her rage, like not black out, but just kind of like, you know, like when you're just, oh, yeah. man, sometimes you just like,
yeah.
You say stuff that you don't mean and you do stuff that you don't mean and. Not that that's an excuse and gives her a free pass or anything, because she definitely knew what she was doing, but maybe she doesn't remember all the details because she was in such a rage.
Yeah, that's very true.
I don't know.
The Lululemon store in Bethesda, Washington, Maryland. Maryland, not Washington, Maryland. I'm not even going to say that again. You know where it is.
Yeah.
That store is still there. It now has a beautiful mural in honor of Jaina Murray. Jaina was an incredible woman and is missed dearly by her friends and family. And, you know, we just need to remember her legacy, how, you know, adventurous and amazing she was. She was just amazing.
Yeah. What a tragedy, man.
Yeah, that is the brutal, wild murder that happened in a Lululemon store.
So crazy. Yeah. I remember like, it just being such a crazy story and just being like, oh, my jaw dropping like the whole time, like, what?
Yeah,
it was Brittany.
I know.
Brittany.
I didn't like, I knew going into this because I've heard it before, obviously, so I knew it was Brittany, but I didn't remember like how difficult it was for them to get to that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like they suspected her but couldn't prove it. Like, they genuinely did not suspect her for a while. I mean, she was only arrested a week later, so it's not like it took that long. But still, like, they if they hadn't found, if they hadn't done the stakeout where they, like, actually got to confront the two men, I bet that they would have, like, followed that lead for a lot longer.
Yeah, exactly. That's so crazy. Even, I mean, a week, if you think about, like, an investigative standpoint, like, a week is kind of a long time, because it's like we always say, like, the first 48 hours are the most important. True. And then, you know, there's several days after that that she went completely undetected.
True.
And it's, I mean, that is kind of wild, you know, like, I said, it would have been a huge red flag, but maybe that's because I already know that she did it. But anytime there's, like, superficial cuts on someone, I'm just like, you did it. It's you. If you've ever seen Scream, I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but, you know, they're like, just do it. Just cut yourself or shoot yourself just, like, a little bit in the arm so it doesn't, like, kill you, but you got shot. Yeah, that's what I always think about.
That's funny. All right, you guys, so that was my case for the week. I hope you guys enjoyed. Like I said, I will put all of the photos up on Instagram. Again, be careful if you Google search this, because you will find all of the photos. I will not put the, like, gruesome ones up, just some of the ones of the store and the victim, obviously. And our Instagram is @inhuman_podcast, so you can see all of that there. And I'll also post it on Twitter with the same username. And you can follow us on TikTok @inhumanpodcast.
And Facebook @inhumanpodcast.
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's a little baby just coming out.
They're all little babies.
Yeah, they are.
They're all little babies just growing slowly.
Yeah. But we're proud of them.
Leave us a rating and review if you enjoy. It really helps us get out there, reach more people, and we'd really appreciate it. And we will see you on Thursday. Until then, keep it human.
Bye.